you, thank you. I don't know who you guys are more excited to see, me or Joe Biden. But my name is Claressa Shields. I stand before you as a proud American, proud to have represented my hometown of Flint, the state of Michigan, and our great country at the Olympics. For me, the Olympics were a proud moment to represent my country, even prouder to bring home the gold and the amazing. And the amazing thing about the Olympics are the people you meet around the world. But as much as you learn about them, you learn how much you love your own home country. You can't really describe the feeling when you see your flag rising from the medal stand, but you feel that pride when people from other countries ask you what it's like to live in the greatest country in the world. And it's pretty cool knowing that when you're representing your country, you've got a president and a vice president representing you. We've had tough times in Michigan, but we never give up. We just get up and keep going. We keep fighting with the president and vice president who's got our backs. When things are looking bad for the auto industry here in Michigan, they bet on us. And we're proving everyone in the world why the best cars in the world are stamped made in America. For young people like me and my friends, they're betting on us by putting an education within reach for all of us, helping our schools get better and helping us afford a college education. And for our country, they're fighting for those basic values that I saw represented by my fellow U.S. Olympians and that I see back home in Michigan, hard work and fair play. I know by preparing for something that comes around only every 4 years, you go as far as your drive can take you. It's tough. You make sacrifices, but it's worth it because you know you're part of something bigger than yourself. And that's what this election is about, and something Vice President Joe Biden understands. He knows the pride of representing a working-class town like Scranton, Pennsylvania. He knows the pride of representing your country around the world. And he knows the pride you feel in never giving up, always getting up, and always fighting for what's right. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's my honor to introduce the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Hey, folks, isn't she amazing? I want you to introduce to another athlete, not a gold medalist, but she's a heck of a lacrosse player in basketball. This is my granddaughter going into eighth grade, Finnegan Biden. And I think she came because Clarissa was going to be here. Oh, it's so great to see you all. That is pretty impressive. That is pretty impressive. I want to tell you something. Watching you, Clarissa, reminded me, some of you have heard me say this before from afar. My dad had just one saying. I played sports, nothing like this child, but I played sports, and it was the essence of what I thought was the most important thing in my life when I was in high school and college. And my dad used to have only one thing to say when he'd come watch me play football or baseball. From the time I started playing in the fourth grade, he said, Joey, just get up. Get knocked down, get up. Just get up. Child, you know how to get up, man. You know how to get up. My dad used to say, the measure of a man or woman wasn't whether they got knocked down, but how quickly they got up. And guess what? Detroit's getting back up. Detroit's getting back up. And I tell you, in no small part, because where's John Conyers? Hey, Big John, how are you, Mr. Chairman? John, thanks for the passport into the district. I know this is your district. John's one of my great friends my whole career. It's great to see you, buddy, and congratulations. Congratulations. Understand that that Hanson Clark is the representative. Clark, where are you? Hey, Hanson, how you doing, man? Now, the only thing I don't like about Hanson is he has all his hair and he's better looking than I am. But other than that, I like him a lot. And a guy who's been my friend for a long time, Sandra Levin, one of the great, great congressmen ever. Where is Sandra? You here? I know he's here somewhere. Well, it's great to see you all. Thank you all for being here. You know, for one congressman, any congressman, to come and hear a vice president speak, that's like, you know, a bus driver going on a bus driving holiday. I mean, you know, it's like you've done that before. But I want to also thank Anita Williams, Anita, the principal of this great school. Anita, I got to see Anita a little bit earlier. She started off, she said, "Welcome to the best high school in Detroit." And Coach Grice, where are you? Coach, how you doing, man? I tell you what, I understand 40 of your ball players are here somewhere. Hey, guys. I understand you got a big game coming up. Well, go get them, guys. I want to tell you, you guys owe me big. You know why you owe me big? If I wasn't here, you'd be out there smelling that grass on your stomach there, man. So, you know, I used to love anybody get me out of preseason football practice, man. Any of y'all ever play football, man? I don't, anybody tells you they like preseason, they're nuts. They're crazy. Essential but tough. Great to see you, Coach. I wish you the best of luck this year. Well, look, folks, I'll try to get right to it. I'm impressed by the crowd here. Thank you all so much for coming out. And do you mind if I take my coat off here? I'm not ready to go a couple rounds with Carissa, but it's hot in here. Look, folks, here's what I want to say to y'all. And say it just to say it to you straight. Look, folks, the country, come November, is going to face one of the starkest choices it's had in my memory. Because there's going to be no wondering who stands where, no wondering what direction this country is going to go, depending on who gets reelected or who gets elected. And when Governor Romney, who, by the way, is a decent man, a good family man. No. I disagree with him. I'm almost everything politically, but he's a decent man. When he's selected as his running mate, when he selected his running mate, those stark differences even became more stark. Congressman Ryan, who is, again, a good man, a good family man, he has given definition to Governor Romney's vague commitments, John, up to now. Now we know. Congressman Ryan and the member of the Republican Congressional Caucus, the Republicans in the Congress, they, as one person said, they have already passed in the Republican House what Governor Romney is promising to pass for the whole nation. So I say to my friends in Congress, this is a little bit like two incumbents running against one another. In a sense, there's no mystery here. You know exactly, and they're straightforward about it. Coach, to use an old football metaphor, they're not hiding the ball. They're not hiding the ball. They're telling us exactly what they're going to do, and they've done it. They've done it in the House. And ladies and gentlemen, they call their new economic plan, what they're talking about, they call their plan new, they call it bold, and they call it gutsy. But the neighborhood I come from, there's nothing gutsy about giving a millionaire another tax break. And there's nothing bold about cutting Medicare and Medicaid and education and research and development in order to pay for that tax cut. Not only is it not new, folks, it's not fair, it's not right, and the people who will pay the price are the working-class folks and middle-class folks in this country. They're the ones going to pay the price. And there's overwhelming evidence. There's overwhelming evidence. This policy will not grow the economy again. It will not grow it. It didn't before. We've seen this before, and it won't grow it, the economy, now. Folks, we've seen this movie before. We've seen it. We know how it ends. It ends with the Great Recession of 2008, throwing millions of people out of work. It was a catastrophe. for the middle class and the working class. Folks, we cannot go back to those days. We have to move forward. And ladies and gentlemen, the President and I have a very different way forward than our Republican friends. You know, we know the history of this country. And from our own experience, we know you don't grow the economy of this great nation from millionaires down. You grow it from the middle out. That's how you grow it. Because, by the way, folks, when the middle class is growing, the poor have a way up, and the very wealthy do very, very well. Everybody benefits. Folks, what this is all about, when you cut it down to its core, it's about Americans having an opportunity to have a decent standard of living, a decent job, be able to own their home and not rent it, a place where hard work is rewarded and taking responsibility is expected. Look, folks, my dad had an expression that I heard my whole life, ever from the time we had to move from Scranton, Pennsylvania, for your head to find a better job to take care of his family. That's how I got to Wilmington, Delaware. And here's what he'd say, no joke. He said, Joey, a job is about a lot more than a paycheck. It's about your dignity. It's about respect. It really is. It's about your sense of yourself, your place in the community. It's about being able to turn to your child and say, honey, it's going to be okay. I mean, that's all. Just, it's going to be okay. And believe in it. Believe in it. Too many people, where I come from, here in Detroit, around the country, too many people are not confident about being able to turn to their kids and say, honey, it's going to be okay, because they've been battered. They've been banged. Americans, through no fault of their own, they've been stripped of their dignity. And millions more who have jobs, have had to live for the past 5, 6, 7 years with stagnant wages, no increases, making it increasingly difficult to care for their families. You know, I talk about, John's heard me say it, I talk about the longest walk a parent can make. The longest walk a parent can make is up a short flight of stairs to their child's bedroom. And I mean this sincerely. To say, honey, I'm sorry, but daddy lost his job. Mommy lost her job. Or the bank says we can't live here anymore. Honey, you can't play in that little league team next year. You can't sing in the choir. We got to move, honey. We got to move. My dad made that walk when I was going from third grade to fourth grade. When he made the walk, he sat there and said, but it's going to be okay. He said he's going to move 157 miles away to Wilmington, Delaware, because that's where Uncle Frank was. And Uncle Frank had a good job, and when he got enough, saved enough, he'd bring us all down. Well, you know, a lot of you know people have made that walk. A lot of you know people who are going to bed tonight, going to be staring at the ceiling, wondering whether or not, am I going to be able to live in this house 5 months from now? Am I going to be here? Am I going to be okay? My kid's going to be okay? I wonder how many of you know somebody, a mom and dad, sat at a kitchen table over the last couple months and said, who's going to tell Sandra that she can't go back to school at the college or community college next semester? We just don't have the money. How are we going to tell her? Well, folks, and I mean this sincerely, when the President and I ran the first time, we knew how tough it was going to be. We knew the devastation that had been visited upon this country by the Great Recession. Even we didn't know just how extensive it was. No one did at the time. But we ran determined to restore dignity and pride to hardworking American people, to provide them with the ability to care for their families. There are over 4.5 million people today, I'm proud to say, that are making a different walk. Not up the stairs to their kid's bedroom, but a walk from a manufacturing plant where they're, wow, once again, making the best automobiles in the world. A walk from the assembly line to the parking lot to their car, being able to go home and say, honey, I'm making a product the world wants to buy, and I'm proud of what I'm doing. A walk from the graduation stage at a community college or a four-year college to a high-tech company that just closed down its operations in China and came to Detroit or Michigan. A walk from a job back home to sit at the dinner table and say to the kids, kids, mommy doesn't have to work two jobs anymore. Dad's okay. I got a job again. That's what goes on. That's what's going on in the neighborhoods I come from. That's what people are looking for. We got a long way to go. There's still an awful lot of people out there, an awful lot of people out there still hurting. But things are starting to come back. Folks, we've been fighting to help people keep their homes, help them keep their health care, keep their child care so they can work and know someone's there to take care of their child. Protect them from predatory lending and Wall Street abuses. Encourage American companies to insource instead of outsource. Sandra and John and Hansen can tell you about a vote they had. They had a vote in the Congress. Simple vote. All we said was, look, we said, instead of, like we've been doing the last 30 years, instead of giving a company a tax credit in the millions of dollars for going into a factory in Michigan or Delaware, unbolting the machinery, putting it in the belly of a ship or in the belly of a plane and taking it to China, instead of getting a tax credit for doing that, the cost of moving, we reward people for moving. We said, look, we can't tell them not to go, but here's what we can do. We can stop giving them a break if they do go. And we came along and we said, John said, these guys said, look, let's give that same tax break to somebody who unbolts a machine in Singapore and brings it back to Michigan. Give them the tax break. Kind of simple, right? I mean, not complicated, not complicated. They all voted no. They said no. We should be discouraging outsourcing, not encouraging it. Like Governor Romney's done, the Washington Post said, Romney and the companies he owned at Bain Capital, quote, pioneered outsourcing. As the elected official to tell you to say, when I started harping on that about a month and a half ago, the Romney campaign said, Vice President Biden doesn't understand. He doesn't understand the difference between outsourcing and offshoring. Whoa. Hey. Can't you picture it now? Two people in the unemployment line. One turns to the other and says, Harry, were you outsourced or offshore? What difference does it make? You don't have a job. You don't have a job. Man, like I said, these aren't bad guys. They just don't get it. They don't get what happens on the street. They don't get what happens in the neighborhoods. They don't get what happens when people don't have these jobs. Look, Republican obstructionism has slowed our progress, but it has not stopped it. In spite of them, in spite of Governor Romney's insistence that we, quote, let Detroit go bankrupt, we rescued the automobile industry. Saving 1 million jobs. With your help, we will. Folks, look. Look what's happened since they've come out of bankruptcy. 200,000 new jobs created. A commitment, and you're seeing it here in Detroit and in Michigan, of committing almost $30 billion to be reinvested in the United States in plant and equipment, which will create another tens of thousands of jobs. Folks, look, we passed the toughest Wall Street regulation in history, turning Wall Street back into what it was supposed to be, an allocator of capital, not a casino. Folks, we improved education, raising standards, demanding more of both teachers as students, and everybody, demanding more of all of us. My mom used to have an expression, want every high school student to remember this here. My mom used to say, children tend to become that which you expect of them. We expect a lot of you because you're capable of a lot. We did common sense things that you would have thought they could before. We took the $60 billion that we were going to be paying banks over the next 10 years to put through the loans for students to go to college, federal loans. And we said, hey, look, you guys are okay, but we're not going to pay anymore. We're just going to take that $60 billion and put people into Pell Grants and back to school. The banks weren't doing anything wrong, but it was a waste of money. But guess what? In this neighborhood, every neighborhood across America, instead of 6 million kids in school because of Pell Grants, there are 9 million kids in school because of Pell Grants. And by the way, I've been in and out of Iraq and Afghanistan over 20 times. My son spent a year in Iraq as a captain. I've seen firsthand, as my congressional friends have seen, the sacrifices this 9/11 generation of warriors has made. Folks, maybe the most important thing we've done is we believe that the only truly sacred obligation a nation has is to care for those who we sent to war who come home injured and in need. By guaranteeing them the health care they need for now and as long as they live, and giving them the opportunity for education that they are entitled to. We even had to fight with these other guys over whether or not they would support giving businesses tax breaks if they hired veterans and an $8,000 tax break if they hired a wounded warrior. It was a fight. We shouldn't even be talking about that any more than we should be talking about whether we should repass my violence against women bill. What are we talking about? Look, folks, we've cut middle-class taxes every year we've been in office. Federal taxes for the middle-class families are currently nearly at their lowest level since the Eisenhower administration. We cut small business taxes to help them grow. We helped millions of families modify their mortgages so they could stay in their homes. And we helped more than 1 million refinance their mortgages, saving $3,000 a year. But guess what? We could do it for another 12 million if the Republicans could just get out of the way. Just get out of the way. Right? Just get out of the way. And it won't cost the government a penny. Look, folks, I hope some of you guys graduating from this great school next year are going to go to a four-year college or a community college. My wife, who teaches full-time at a community college as second lady, she says the best-kept secret in America is our community colleges. Well, here's what we did. Here's what we did with the help of our congressional delegation. We went out there and we said, okay, you realize there are 600,000 high-tech manufacturing jobs that are going unfilled in our local communities. Why? Because with all that outsourcing that happened over the years, we lost the tool and die makers. We lost a generation of specialists. We lost. And these are new technologies. All people need is a certificate, a little training. So what do? We partnered here in this state of Michigan with community colleges and companies who have jobs available to them and said to the companies, what training do you need? And they set the exact training up in the community college. So you graduate, get your certificate, you go right in an assembly line to a job, a manufacturing job, averaging $50,000 a year. The kind of jobs, I might add, that even Romney can't export. Look, folks, the result, 29 straight months of private sector job growth, 4.5 million private sector jobs, 500,000 new manufacturing jobs, the fastest growth since 1980s. And by the way, there would have been another 1 to 2 million jobs created if they had supported our jobs bill. That's what experts say. So, folks, I know over the years a lot of Democrats have said to Sandra and to Hansen and to John and I, you know, why is it the Republicans are able to reduce what they stand for to a bumper sticker? I mean, they're able to say, you know, we're against taxes, for the military and whatever. Why can't we do that? Well, folks, I got a bumper sticker for you. Osama bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive. Osama bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive. You want a bumper sticker? That sums it up, man. Tells you what this great president of ours has already done. He's guaranteed real, measurable progress. Not enough. Not enough, but it's important progress. Governor Romney and Congressman Ryan are running on a theme as well. Their theme is, and I quote, restore the dreams and greatness of this country. But what they're not telling you is that the very plans that the Congressman voted for over the last 14 years, the very economic policy the governor supported over this period of time, as governor and as a businessman, they were the very same policies that put America's greatness in jeopardy. You know, I find it fascinating. Next time you see one of your Republican friends, well-intended, telling you that, you know, well, you know, we can do better, say, look, ask them the following question. Say, I'm a little confused here. The congressman and the governor acknowledge that President Obama and Vice President Biden inherited a really difficult economic situation. That's what they say, right? What else could they say, right? Now, ask your Republican friends, how do they think we got in this difficult situation? I mean, like, what happened? What happened? How did this calamity land on America? We're just going along great one day, and all of a sudden, bam, the Great Recession. Finnegan has a little cousin, my fourth granddaughter. Her name is Natalie. And if she were here, she'd say, Pop, did Casper the Friendly Ghost do it? I mean, where did it come from? How did these bad things happen? What they didn't tell you was, what they didn't tell you was, when Congressman Ryan was elected to the Congress in 1998 during the Democratic administration, we had a balanced budget and the middle class was thriving. What they didn't say was that the day we were sworn in on January 20, 2009, we inherited a deficit, a bill, for $1 trillion before the president sat behind his desk. And a middle class that was devastated. And now, And now, it's amazing. They discovered the middle class and they care about it. They're running to save the middle class. You know, my dad, God love him, used to have, and John, you met my dad before. My dad was a high school educated, graceful, decent man. And my dad used to have an expression when someone would say to him, well, his name was Joe, Joe, let me tell you what I value. My dad would go like this. He said, Charlie, don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget and I will tell you what you value. Show me your budget. Well, folks, that's fair, right? You know, I value women in the workforce. I don't employ any, but I value women in the workforce. Okay? That person doesn't value women in the workforce, don't have any women in the workforce. So let's take a look. Let's try to be objective about this. Stand back, take a look at what these guys value. Let's look at what they're proposing. Let's look at their budget. Governor Romney says in the first 100 days, if he's elected, he will repeal the Wall Street reform legislation that we passed and let the big banks once again write their own rules. That's number one. He then says he wants to continue the very same policies that have encouraged the outsourcing over the past two decades. He wants to make massive cuts. I mean, massive cuts in education. Ask John or any of the congressmen, because they voted against to try to stop it in the House. It's explicit and specific. Massive cuts in college assistance and college education. Barack, Michelle, and Jill and I were literally waiting to go into an event together. And all of a sudden, I think it was Michelle that said, you know, not a one of us, and this is serious, not a one of us, my wife Jill, who's a community college professor, me, Barack, or Michelle, not one of us would be standing where we were it not for college assistance and scholarships. Not one. Not one. And these guys want to wipe it out. They make massive cuts in Medicaid, forgetting that a significant number of the people on Medicaid were thrown onto Medicaid because they lost their jobs through no fault of their own. If the budget that they support, which passed the House and got defeated in the Senate, the one that Romney is pushing, if that were to become law, 19 million people on Medicaid today, including 1 million seniors, would be thrown off. Look, 75% of all the people in a home getting care, they're there because of Medicare. 75% of them are women. Where are they going to go? I'm serious. Do you guys think about the consequence? What is going to happen if that happened? 19 million. Massive cuts proposed for future generations of Social Security. Romney put forward a detailed plan of Social Security. So if you're in your 20s, by the time you're old enough for Social Security, you'll get $4,700 less than someone gets now. If you're in your 40s, you get $2,400 less. And I could go through it all and bore you with the detail. But fundamental change. Massive changes in health care, allowing insurance companies once again to make the rules. Not a joke, literal. Repeal, quote, Obamacare, and guess what? No longer does insurance company have to keep you on the policy. They can tell you when you get sick, no, you lose your policy. They can tell you that, guess what, you've hit your limit. You've gone through chemo for 8 months, we're not going to pay for it anymore. That was before we passed Obamacare. Massive changes in Medicare. Here's what they want to do. They say, well, it's not going to affect anybody who is, which is not quite true, I won't go into the detail, but under 55. But guess what it says? It says after that, what you get to do is you get a voucher, meaning that they'll give you the government will give you a set amount of money to go out and find your own insurance policy. Right now, it's guaranteed. If you have Medicare, you go to the doc, you pay a copay, the government pays the rest. You same with a hospital, you pay a copay, the government. No guarantee. Knowing that they limit it, as John can tell you, they limit it to a 0.5% increase It's meaning that clearly the cost is going to outrun what you have. And what the experts have said, they've looked at it, totally nonpartisan group. They say it would cost seniors an average of $6,400 a year more for their health care. I had a great advantage, like some of you have had. It is an advantage. When my dad was dying for him to live with me, and my mom, the last, she died when she was 92, the last 4 years of her life living with me. And toward the end, and you pay me a lot of money as vice president, and you paid me a good salary when I was a United States senator, and my brother Jimmy does well, and my sister does well. They have four kids who are successful. Guess what? It was still a struggle to make care of all my mom's bills. Yeah. We were able to do it, no complaint. It was an honor. But you know what it did? We had to lie to my mom and tell her, no, honey, this is all covered by your Medicare, and this is all covered by the sale of your home, which it wasn't. Because do you know any parent who wants to be a burden for their children? Do you know anybody? I don't know anybody parent wants to do that. And folks, they changed the whole deal. And they do all this stuff and more I haven't mentioned. All, and then they kick 200,000 kids out of Head Start. Look, I could go down the list, but you're standing, I'm not going to take more of your time. Here's the deal. Why are they doing all this? They're doing all this in the service of being able to provide these massive tax cuts for the very wealthy. Now, look, I just want to put, again, I go in a lot of detail that you already know in your gut, but let me give you two examples. When Romney and our Republican friends say they want to extend the Bush tax cut for the wealthy, let's just take one group of people. That whole tax cut will cost, extending that, $1 trillion over the next 10 years. You know where 500 billion of that trillion goes? You're going to think I'm making this up. It goes to 120,000 families in America. You hear me now? That's not a joke. $500 billion, which means they got to cut $500 billion somewhere else or balloon the deficit. $500 billion goes to 120,000 families. And on top of that, Governor Romney's been straightforward, not hiding the ball again, Coach. He's came along and he said, and I want a new $1.6 trillion tax cut for people making a minimum of $1 million. That means an average tax cut and on top of that of another $250,000 a year. Five times the median income of the American people in 1 year. That's per year. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not only has a gigantic price tag, it increases the deficit. And according to, and I'm going to sound like a policy guy here, and I apologize, sound like a senator, which I was proud to be. The Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, this is one of these think tank groups that go and objectively look at all the proposals we come up, all of us come up with. They said if these tax cuts go through, it will mean that the average middle-class family with a child, one or more children, will have their income taxes go up, their taxes go up, $2,000 a year. So we're going to raise $2,000 a year for middle-class families. This is real. In order to give $500 billion to 120,000 families? And look, folks, this isn't class warfare. I come from a wealthy little state of Delaware, okay? Rich folks are just as patriotic as poor folks. The difference here is no one's asked anything of them, and they're not even asking for this. They're not even asking for it, folks. And Romney calls the president out of touch. Out of touch. Swiss bank account. Untold millions in the Cayman Islands. Refusal to release your tax returns. They call my president out of touch. Come on. Get real here. Folks, this is not your father's Republican Party. And this is not even Mitt Romney's father's Republican Party. This is a different group of people. They have a very fundamentally different vision for America, one that is totally different than ours. Our vision rests upon a growing, prosperous middle class. We see a future where my granddaughter, who you just met, has every single solitary opportunity my grandson has throughout her life. We see an America where women get equal pay for equal work. For real. Where getting ill does not risk bankruptcy. Where no millionaire pays at a lower rate than a middle-class family. Where we provide access to college to every qualified kid, regardless of what neighborhood they come from. And we're not only bring back the automobile industry, but we're become once again the leader in manufacturing country in the world. Where is it written? Where is it written that we cannot do that? In America, we're once again, instead of ranking 16th, we rank one in the world in the percentage of our population that graduates from college, where science is valued, innovation is encouraged. Ladies and gentlemen, we see an America where the middle class gets their taxes cut, not raised, where Social Security is protected, where Medicaid is expanded, where Medicare fulfills its original mission. Folks, we see a future where we maintain our sacred obligation to keep faith with our veterans. As the president said in the end, he said, this is a make-or-break moment for the middle class. It really is. It really is. So much is at stake. And, folks, I haven't even talked about foreign policy. I haven't even talked about what the Supreme Court would look like after 4 years of the Romney administration. Look, folks, I believe we're going to win. I believe, and let me tell you why. I believe we're going to win because, in the end, throughout our history, every presidential election has come down to one fundamental look as it relates to the candidates. Who has the most character? Who has the character, the conviction of their convictions? And who has the vision? Folks, it will not surprise you. On that score, I don't even think it's close. It's not even close. And I am absolutely convinced the American people are seeing that. Yes, sir. They're seeing my guy, our guy. He has a backbone like a ramrod. He does exactly what he says he's going to do. And as your congressional delegation here can tell you, I spend 4 to 6 hours a day with him every single day since we got elected, with the exception of the last 5 weeks when we're both campaigning, and we only meet twice a week now, 2 days a week, because he's out on the road and I am. But folks, I can tell you, and I've known 8 presidents, 3 of them intimately, I have never once in all the time I've been with this president, including our private meetings, which we have once a week when we have lunch together, I've never once, on the difficult decisions he's had to make, heard him ask me or anyone else, what are the politics in this for me? Not one single time. Not once. Folks, I'm absolutely certain we're going to rebuild this country stronger than it was before. I'm absolutely certain we're going to rebuild the middle class stronger than it was before. Because I know, as you know, that given even a half a chance, the American people have never, 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 ever let their country down. Not once. And I know, and I remind foreign leaders every day, that it's never been a good bet to bet against America. Never, never, never. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's meet this moment. Let's meet this moment together. With your help, we will win Michigan.
and we will win this country. Thank you, and God bless you. And may God protect our troops. And Clarissa, thank you. Come here, kid. This is what it's all about. Getting up. Getting up. God love you, kid. Thank you all.